This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Is it equal?
From WDET in Detroit, this is Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm here in studio with the show's producer, Carrie Jr. the second. Hey, Carrie.
How you doing, Stephen?
So today we want to talk about an issue that I think really connects to the idea, a really fundamental idea, in fact, of equality and opportunity, and that's access to healthcare. It's an issue that we talk about in broad terms an awful lot, but here I want to take a look at something pretty specific, and that's access to maternal care for women and the emergence of something that they are calling maternal healthcare deserts, places where women cannot find easy access to the kind of care they need when they are pregnant or have delivered a child into the world, and that distance, that disconnect from that healthcare, of course, causes some outcomes that that we find really concerning.
Yeah, I think a lot of this episode's idea came from a report that was released in 2022 by March of Dimes, which is a nonprofit that pretty much tracks the prevalence of maternity care deserts throughout the country. They've defined maternity care deserts as a county that if there's no hospitals providing obstetric care, there's no birth centers, there's no OBGYN, and no certified nurse midwives. So that's how they've defined maternity care deserts. They've released this report. It's shown also over the years that there's been a decrease in maternity care over the years since they started reporting this in 2018. So that, along with a lot of the broader understandings of what has been going on politically, is, I think, interesting to get into.
Yeah, and some of the numbers here are pretty staggering, aren't they, Carrie?
Yeah, they are. I mean, they report that more than 5.6 million women live in counties with no or limited access to maternity care. I mean, they have a map here, Stephen, that we have pulled up. And if you can look at this map, it shows like some states where there's a large amount of counties where there aren't a lot of maternity care. There's like states like South Dakota, you can see here on their map. This is a partnership between Deloitte and March of Dimes. And this map has like, they map it all out. They have South Dakota, states like Texas, Oklahoma, multiple counties. And a lot of them, as they say, you know, sit in rural counties. So yeah, it's pretty prevalent. And the demographics I just told you, the numbers show a lot about
what that care looks like. There are two things that I'm hoping that we can get to in the conversations we're going to have about this. One, of course, is what's driving this, what is causing all of this to happen. And in that analysis, I also want to get to the connection that exists between what's happening in urban environments like Detroit and rural. I think it's one of the things that is pretty important to understand, that these kinds of inequalities play out in lots of different places.
Exactly.
We often think of them as being housed in one place or another. And then the second part is what the Dobbs decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, which overturned Roe v. Wade a few years ago, what effect that's having on some of this. It's a decision that was about abortion and abortion access, but it has kind of spread its tentacles, I think, since it was decided to affect a number of other medical access questions. And this is one of them.
Two quick things before we go, because I know we got to get to our first conversation.
Yes.
To your point about urban versus rural, we talk a lot about, or at least this report highlights a lot about the discrepancies in how rural areas don't have access. But as you're talking about, even when it comes to racial disparities, right, we're talking about access to maternal care for Black women, for women, for minority women. We're also talking about, in addition to that, the second point, the Dobbs decision. Like I said, this report came out in 2022, and some of these maps are 2021. There's a lot of legal challenges that have happened since then, including the Dobbs decision. Wondering, as you said, how that will impact. So our guests, I'm sure, will have some great insight into that.
Yeah. So we're going to start with Stephanie Wirth, who is the executive director of market development at the March of Dimes. That's the nonprofit that is tracking these maternal services across the United States. And a little later, we're going to talk with Sonia Hassan, who is Associate Vice President here at Wayne State University. She's a professor of obstetrics and gynecology and maternal fetal medicine. She's the founder and director of the Office of Women's Health here at Wayne State. So let's start with Stephanie Wirth. Stephanie Wirth, it's really great to have you here with us on Created Equal. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here this morning. Thank you for having me.
So I think to get this conversation started, it would be best to define some of our terms. When we say maternity care desert, for instance, that brings to mind certain images, I think, in people's minds. But I would love to have you define that. What does that term mean?
So maternity care desert means that a woman of reproductive age is living in a space where there is no obstetric care, no obstetric providers, no clinics, no hospitals within their county.
And the idea of that, I think, in America in 2024 is kind of hard to wrap your mind around. So how common is that in America?
Right now, more than 2.3 million women of reproductive age are living in places which are maternity care deserts. So 33% of the counties in the United States are classified as maternity care deserts.
Yeah. And so let's talk about what life in those counties would be like for women of childbearing age who find themselves pregnant and in need of this medical care. What does that look like?
So typically that means you're traveling about 2.7 times farther than those living in a place with full access to obstetrical care. You're living more than 8 miles away from a place that has care for you. That can mean anything from having to, you know, make additional childcare arrangements. You're traveling outside someplace that's not your comfort or that you're familiar with. It takes on a variety of complications for women.
And I would imagine that, of course, poverty, which we do find frequently in rural counties where this kind of dynamic would exist, exacerbates that issue, correct?
Absolutely. And it's not always poverty, but poverty does exacerbate it because we're talking about access to care. So that can also have implications for insurance, like I said, transportation. And when you're living in a place like Metro Detroit or Southeast Michigan, which is not actually categorized as a maternity care desert, you're looking at transportation issues very often. So even though we have a plethora of obstetrical care in Southeast Michigan, what we don't have very often is transportation to actually access this care.
Right. So let's talk about the differences, I think, between this problem in an urban context and this problem in a rural context. You were just talking about the kinds of barriers that women might find in urban areas to finding, easy maternal care, but they look different than they do in rural settings. Talk about those differences and how here in Michigan in particular, we see so much of that rural isolation and difficulty to access maternal care.
So in rural settings, again, you're talking about the distance to care. Mm-hmm. And so you're looking at very common factors like the mere stress of having to coordinate an actual trip to the doctor because you're going to have to travel so much further away. This could mean childcare. If this is not the family's first baby, it could mean taking off work for longer periods. Very often when you're expecting and you're working, these appointments take place during the day. So you're taking a little time away from the office to go to someplace that's not too far away would be the hope. But if it's further away, you know, you may end up using additional vacation time, PTO time to actually get to this doctor appointment. And this can lead to other missed appointments. If anything happens with those arrangements, it could throw you off. There you are 20 minutes late for appointment and not able to keep that appointment. And you've got missed prenatal care appointments. And then that creates a variety of stress in its own right. If you're in an urban setting, again, who wants to be 8 months pregnant and having to stand at a bus stop to get to the doctor or to incur the additional expense of taking an Uber to get to a doctor's appointment? And again, when you're, you know, if you are impoverished or working at a lower wage job, it may be simply harder to get away from work to go and take care of your prenatal care.
Yeah. So this is a national problem, as you point out, but it is also a particularly acute problem here in Michigan. Talk about what we're facing in terms of these maternal care deserts in Michigan and where we're seeing them affect people's health and access to health care.
In Michigan, we're primarily seeing it more in northern Michigan and particularly in the UP. Again, not as much in southeast Michigan as you would see in some other areas. But again, in Michigan, there has actually been a decrease as well in the number of birthing hospitals and facilities that women have access to. So in Michigan, about 18.1 is the statistic, right, of the counties in Michigan are defined as maternity care deserts.
18.1% of the counties.
18.1% of the counties,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so overall in Michigan, women do have a really high vulnerability to poor outcomes because of the availability of reproductive health care services. So you see more full and moderate access in Southeast Michigan, the Detroit area. It gets into problems, again, in northern Michigan, where there are more rural areas. But again, you've got other social determinants that impact care in Southeast Michigan. So again, that's, you know, things like transportation. It can be things like access to insurance. It can be your physical environment. If you're not living in a place that's safe, you're probably also not going to walk to the bus stop if you're 6 or 8 months pregnant, kind of thing. So there's just a variety of factors that combine to make pregnancy especially difficult in certain areas of Michigan.
Yeah. And let's talk about what's going on in those areas. You talk about the disappearance of clinics or hospitals that would provide this care. Is there also an issue with the availability of OBGYNs and other staff who would be able to do these things? In other words, is this both about the supply, the creation of doctors to be able to do this, as well as the resources to maintain facilities where they might work and people might access them?
Absolutely. I think particularly since the pandemic, people are tuned in a bit to somewhat of a healthcare crisis in terms of staffing and personnel. And so obstetric hospitals are particularly prone to this issue because it's expensive to maintain staff for 24 hours and having a full staff on call. There are also declining birth rates in certain areas, which for a hospital makes it less advantageous, right, to maintain that full-time staff. There are workforce shortages, which we are all aware of, and it's cost more. The cost of healthcare has increased, so the cost of delivering babies and the cost of maternity care is more expensive than it used to be. And there's also the issue of low provider reimbursement rates from Medicaid. So even though we've had great success with things in Michigan like improving access to care through Medicaid expansion and expanding the care postpartum for women who are on Medicaid, you still have the issue of low provider reimbursement to hospitals and facilities, which makes some hospitals and facilities less inclined to take Medicaid patients.
I want to get an idea as well of what the care is that we're talking about that women need to access while they're pregnant and about to give birth to a child, and what happens when they don't get that care? Like the stakes here in terms of why this is important and why the absence of it is such a public health crisis.
Well, I think it's important because from even being, you know, finding out that you're pregnant, that may be done at home, but from that point forward, that involves medical care, that involves very early care to make sure that the mom and the baby are in optimal health to move forward with the pregnancy, to maintain a healthy pregnancy. We want to prevent preterm births as much as possible. That's what March of Dimes is all about. And so getting that very, very early prenatal care, making sure you have access to things like prenatal vitamins, or if you have other conditions that can contribute possibly to a poor outcome, like hypertension or diabetes or some other type of chronic illness, you want to make sure that that's under control as you, you know, move forward in this pregnancy. And again, there are things like very early ultrasounds that take place. Let's get a look at the baby. Let's see how the baby's growing. Are they, you know, is the baby the size that the baby should be for 6, 8, 12 weeks? Is your abdomen growing? So there are measurements that take place. There are diagnostic tests that help ensure the health of your baby as you move forward. And then if you are, depending on your age, there may be additional testing that needs to take place. And as you move through the pregnancy, your visits become more frequent. So you move from maybe once a month to once every 2 weeks to, as you get into the third trimester, you're looking at having an OB visit every single week. And then if you have any type of complications along the way, that's going to happen more frequently. You know, I myself had what they call a geriatric pregnancy in my late 30s. And so that ended up, you know, meaning ultrasounds had to be taken every 3 weeks for my baby. There was special diagnostic testing that took place to make sure that her heart was healthy because we were looking at a chance of Down syndrome. So there came along probably at about 15 or 16 weeks, a whole additional set of testing became necessary for us, which meant a lot more time away from work for me, a lot more travel and a lot more stress. So you already have the stress and the worries that come with being pregnant. And, you know, if you're high risk, that's just multiplied. So getting really good prenatal care is important every step of the way.
Talk about the advocacy that you see as necessary and really whether it's taking place or not to fill these holes, these gaps that exist in the availability of maternal care here in Michigan. It seems like a problem that's hard to solve in some ways because it's about supply, right? It is about the availability of physicians and other medical personnel to be in these rural places to be able to make the access easier for these mothers. So what do you do? What's the lever, I guess, you pull from a policy standpoint to try to attack this problem?
So we actually work on advocacy from a variety of standpoints at March of Dimes. So, you know, that's everything from advocating for telehealth, which has been approved in Michigan. And that means that maybe for some of those visits, you visit with your doctor over the phone or over a computer. And telehealth is very interesting because you can't actually conduct that visit. I remember early on in the pandemic, sitting in on an actual webinar with physicians talking about how they conducted telehealth. And so that may mean that the patient, instead of being weighed when you first walk into the doctor's office, that if you're on a telehealth visit, particularly if you're on video, that physician may ask you to stand on your own scale so they can see your weight. That physician is probably going to ask you to take your own blood pressure, make sure that you're able to do that and share your blood pressure reading over the video call. So there are things that can be done. And then, you know, the mom will go off and get labs separately from the telehealth visit. So we advocate for telehealth. We also advocate for alternative providers, so to speak. So we work on things like doula care legislation, making sure that doula care is covered under Medicaid, for example. And we advocate for family-friendly policies in the workplace to make it easier for moms to get off work and pursue the kind of care that they need, for example. So there's a variety of ways that we advocate and try and make systemic change that's more mom and baby friendly.
When you think about the challenges we have here in Michigan, how close are we to turning this in a different direction, lowering that percentage of counties where you would describe them as maternal care deserts, making sure that women in rural and urban areas, in fact, have better access to maternal care?
Well, Michigan's doing a fairly good job on the legislation that we put forth. For example, as I mentioned, Medicaid expansion has passed in Michigan. Legislation has passed to extend the postpartum period for women on Medicaid from just 6 weeks to a full year. As you know, 6 weeks is just a bare minimum. I had coworkers who've had to come back to work after 4 weeks for economic reasons, kinds of thing. And sometimes you may need more time off than the 12 weeks, but very often, even under family and medical leave, that 12 weeks can be unpaid. I had unpaid FMLA with my second child. Wow. And that's a long time to go. And I was working a fairly decent job at the time. And so we are pushing that type of legislation. It has been successful in Michigan, but we continue that push. So as an aside, I would invite listeners out to join us on our upcoming Advocacy Day in Lansing at the Michigan State Capitol on April 18th, when we will be talking to legislators about the importance of family-friendly legislation and how this impacts moms and babies in the state.
Stephanie, I also want to talk about the current political climate, which I think is framed in large part by the Supreme Court's decision in the Dobbs case, which overturned Roe v. Wade and kicked open the door, I think, to a lot of possible changes in the landscape of maternal health. We have seen some other rulings that followed Dobbs that dabble in subjects like IVF. There are other cases in the courts right now that would restrict a lot of the things that women are able to access now in regard to maternal health. What role do you think that's all playing in this issue of access and things like maternal care deserts?
Well, at March of Dimes, we are a nonpartisan organization and we maintain a position of neutrality on abortion itself. Mm-hmm. And we do not provide funding for abortion services. We want to give every mom and baby the healthiest start. So what we want to ensure is that all women are guaranteed to have quality, affordable health insurance and health care. We are still focused on improving the social and economic conditions and quality of health care at all stages of a woman's life. And we will continue to want to accelerate policies and programs for prevention and supportive care. Things like implications of the Dobbs decision are going to take some time. And we want to continue emphasizing the importance of education. It could influence various elements of reproductive health care. We realize that, and potentially impact maternal and infant health outcomes as well as access. So we're concerned that restricting access to legal abortions might not actually reduce the number of abortions overall, mm-hmm. because research actually shows that there's a high likelihood that this may increase rates of unsafe abortions and have a negative impact on maternal and infant death rates eventually.
Yeah. And what about the progression of intrusions really into the maternal care space that the Dobbs decision kind of invites? The idea that in vitro fertilization all of a sudden is on the table. The idea that access to certain drugs may be on the table in the courts. Does that push us backward in terms of access to maternal care, or is that something that that maybe doesn't have much of an effect?
So we're going to keep adjusting our advocacy efforts to take these changes into account. Yeah. Again, it's going to take some time to see what the actual impact is. And we are fortunate in our 86-year history to have really strong collaborations with a variety of community stakeholders. And that includes policymakers, community organizations. And we're going to continue to advance evidence-based efforts and initiatives around the importance of prenatal care and the safety and health of women in the birthing space. So it's going to take some time for us to see what all these implications are. And we're just going to continue to advocate as we have done for the past 86 years.
Yeah. Okay. Stephanie Wirth of March of Dimes, it was really great to have you here with us on Created Equal. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk with Sonia Hassan, Associate Vice President at Wayne State University and the founder and director of the Office of Women's Health at Wayne State, about maternal health care deserts. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. You're listening to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad that you're with us. We have been talking about the emergence of maternal health care deserts and the increasing trouble that women in both urban and rural environments are having finding access to maternal care. We just heard from Stephanie Wirth of the March of Dimes, which has produced a really interesting and important report that shows the decline in obstetric care service all across the country. There is a map that you can find on Twitter that we have tweeted out that shows that that discrepancy. You could also go to the March of Dimes and read their report and take a look at that map. We want to continue the conversation now with someone who has been really focused on maternal health care and the outcomes that are important because of either access to maternal health care or restricted access to maternal health care. Sonia Hassan is the Associate Vice President here at Wayne State University. She's a professor of obstetrics and gynecology and maternal fetal medicine, and is also the founder and director of the Office of Women's Health here at Wayne State University. Dr. Hassan, welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephen, for having me.
Yeah. So I want to start with a look at what basic maternal care should look like, what we should expect for women to have decent access to in order to have successful pregnancies and to deliver healthy children.
Yeah. So, basic and expected maternal care should really include essential services. Really, that's prenatal care before birth, safe and equitable and evidence-based birthing hospital systems, and postpartum care, of course. And those should all be executed really with the idea of a patient-centered approach, but giving the highest quality care based on what is available to improve babies and moms' outcomes.
Yeah. And when we think about those things and their availability, let's start, for instance, in the city of Detroit. How difficult is that? And is it getting more difficult? Is it presenting more challenges?
So in the Southeast Michigan area, we're fortunate we have a number of birthing hospitals within the vicinity. So technically, you would not fall under the maternal health care desert. However, when you talk about access to care, so the prenatal care portion of it, you could say there are definite deserts. So there are access issues with regards to getting prenatal care, whether that's a result of transportation challenges, whether it's a result of lack of ability to get into a system easily, friendliness with which a patient can get in. All those things are barriers to prenatal care, which then results, of course, in the essential outcome of bad outcomes, but the essential maternal care desert and the prenatal portion. Mm-hmm. So again, we have the birthing parts of it, but that essential area to prevent morbidity and mortality can be improved.
Yeah. And how does that compare to rural communities? I think there's an interesting connection between the idea of this limited access in an urban environment, which is caused by some factors, and limited access that appears in rural environments, which is maybe driven by other things, but there's a connection between them in that they both then produce less than the desired outcome.
Exactly. That's exactly the case. They're the rural areas, for which we do have some in Michigan, in the upper area of Michigan and the Upper Peninsula, which their birthing hospitals are limited in many places. And that means you're less than 50 or greater than 50 miles away from a birthing hospital. And that will result in increased morbidity, mortality, so maternal life and death issues, as well as babies' life and death issues, are very much increased. And again, that is because of the physical access. And it is different from the urban, but the end result is the same.
Yeah, yeah. When we think about the urban challenges that we have, I want to talk more specifically about the things that we see that that either discourage women from accessing care that exists or make it impossible for them to access. So, you know, when we reformed the healthcare system in this country some 14 years ago now, the idea of access was kind of at the center of those reforms. The idea of connecting more people to insurance so that they could see doctors and other medical staff before they reached a crisis state. I would think that if that were working the way we wanted it to work, we wouldn't be seeing more of this difficulty accessing maternal healthcare. So talk about how much of this is access and how much of it is other issues. In other words, things that don't have to do with the availability of insurance or care, but the willingness and the trust that has to exist for people to do it.
So certainly with the Affordable Care Act and the insurance availability, that has taken one hurdle down from which there was a hurdle before, mm-hmm. the ability to have this paid for, of course. And so that has been one advantage. But as you say, that did not take away all the access issues. Number one, and probably on many patients' issues, is the issue of transportation for women mm-hmm. To come into work and, into their care. And that is definitely cited as one issue. The second is issues of childcare so that they can come to those visits easily. And third, there's also the issue of structural racism and systemic issues within the systems, which makes patients leery sometimes to go in if it's not a friendly environment, if it's not an environment that is listening to their needs. You've probably heard the term gaslighting before mm-hmm. for patients for which they're dismissed, those symptoms are dismissed, and they could be very fairly substantial. And so a combination of all of those things together, and really, frankly, just the difficulty in navigating the health system. I mean, even us as doctors, when we're patients, you see that. And if you're right on there, right in front of everyone, and you can't navigate it as quickly as you would want, imagine people who are not part of the system. So yeah. Those things need to be streamlined in a number of ways as well.
The transportation issue is an interesting one in the sense that we have a lot of other problems that are driven by transportation and transportation access. What in your mind are some of the levers that could be pulled to make it easier or better for women who are seeking maternal health care to be able to get to where they need to go? Do they look like the other kinds of transit solutions that we need to have in place?
You know, one thing that we've done successfully in partnership with others is providing transportation to patients who actually need it. And so we have found that that has definitely decreased the rates of preterm birth in some programs that have used that as a lever, assistance with those who require it. Certainly if there's a specific, I think it has to be pregnancy specific to be very effective. Because of the challenges that you face in a larger system.
And when once you get something like that transportation help into place, you still have the access problem in some cases, isn't that right? I mean, it's more than a single step or even a two-step process.
Yes, and we are trying to combat that. And if I could talk about it for a minute, the network in Michigan that we have started with this past several months here with all the leading doctors from the 14 major universities and health systems within Michigan, in order to address some of these issues you're talking about, we have put together a group that has decided that the way to combat some of the issues of preterm birth, which is a leading cause of infant mortality, and preeclampsia, a leading cause of maternal mortality, is to couple the medical interventions that we know are evidence-based with the structural interventions, which are resulting in attacking those social determinants of health, such as transportation, and putting them into one care plan or protocol. The plan for us is to implement that statewide. And so each patient would have the ability, for example, if she needs transportation throughout her pregnancy, would be given transportation for every visit that's required for transportation. And the same for her care, she would be receiving what we think is the optimized care. And so trying to decrease some of those challenges. In addition, and importantly, each patient would have a navigator assigned to that patient to help combat some of those systemic issues I talked about with navigating the system, whether that's their doctor or their pharmacy, the transportation system. And so we are looking at that area and we'll be implementing that soon. I will say I would like to thank the state of Michigan and Priority Health Foundation, which have funded that, but we will be launching that very soon, and more to come on that. But yeah. I think that's one area to focus on, it, putting it all together, collectively working together on that.
You talk about the idea that assigning counselors or caretakers, I guess, to women who are going through this process. It kind of reminds me of the profound need for that connection, that personal connection with people to get them over these hurdles. And I wonder how much of that can be in home, for instance, as opposed to pulling people to care. I mean, there's some things you have to do in a hospital or a clinic for sure, but how much of it would be easier delivered or more effectively delivered if we could push those services out to people's homes, out to maybe churches where people could gather. I mean, places that are more familiar and maybe more comfortable.
Yes, absolutely. In particular, because you are, as you mentioned, more comfortable. And for those things such as the prenatal care visits that can be done without requiring a hospital or a clinic, that is definitely an issue that can be improving outcome. And with the rise in the use of doulas as well, I think that is very important. But bringing the care into, whether it's by mobile units, whether it is by in a church itself or a community center or other places where we have worked with, for example, with shelters and other places, that certainly brings access to care there and more likely that you will see the patient follow up. Yeah. It also provides an opportunity for a lot of educational programming to happen and information supplied and a connection to be brought closer. And then if they do end up going to the clinic or hospital, I think it is their compliance is more because they've gotten that connection already.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Dr. Sonia Hassan of Wayne State University about maternal health care deserts, access to maternal health care, and how we increase those things here in the city of Detroit, Southeast Michigan, and in our state. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Welcome Welcome back to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you have chosen to join us. Our guest is Dr. Sonia Hassan. She's Associate Vice President at Wayne State University, a professor of obstetrics and gynecology and maternal fetal medicine, also the founder and director of the Office of Women's Health at Wayne State University. We've been talking about access to maternal care and the emergence of so-called maternity care deserts, places where women live that it is physically impossible in some cases to get to proper medical care while they are pregnant or after they have delivered a baby. We're also talking about the connection between that kind of rural setting that has those physical challenges and places like the city of Detroit, where there are lots of other barriers. It's kind of a connector between rural equality and urban equality, the idea of opportunity in both places being affected in different ways, but producing similar outcomes. So Dr. Hassan, I want to talk now about some other drivers of this issue. One being the challenge getting people to want to do this work now that because of a number of factors, we're finding that it is harder to get OBGYNs, and it's harder to get OBGYNs to practice in certain areas, and that is one of the things making these outcomes the way that they are.
Yeah, that's a great question, Stephen, because of the challenges of whether it's malpractice or whether it's structural, the lack of structural ability to work, you're seeing less and less of care providers going into this. And there needs to be a concerted effort, I think, on the part of whether it's those in policy or otherwise, also the health system themselves, to recruit people to do this. Because if you think about it, the long-term health of a community is very much determined by the maternal child health. So, so if you have, for example, a woman who delivers preterm or she has preeclampsia in her pregnancy, her risk for hypertension and cardiovascular disease in age 40 and above is much, much higher. Mm. And so it's the long-term health of that community. And that is the same for the baby. And so you have the mom and baby then bound to have cardiovascular disease, diabetes, hypertension in the future. And you've just determined the health of your community over the next generation.
Yeah.
So it's underestimated that I think the effect of this.
So what is causing that decline, I guess, in people wanting to do this work? And from your chair as a physician and as a leader in this space, what are the ways that you manage that decline or try to push it in a different direction?
You know, we try to push it forward. I mean, again, because the people are very motivated to help moms and babies in terms of as a profession and as people, trainees coming into practice. And so we try to push it that you are affecting the lives of many, again, over a generation, if you are fixing this pregnancy right now. Mm-hmm. And that has been motivating for many. But also the fact that there has been some, with the idea of Dobbs and other things around the country, it's the sense of, is government trying to regulate your practice too much? In Michigan, we don't have that issue, thankfully, but probably around the country, you'll see that from different providers.
Yeah. And that was the other dimension of this I wanted to get to, which is that the Dobbs decision is ostensibly about abortion. I mean, it was an overturn of Roe v. Wade, which stood for 50 years as at least the guidepost for abortion regulation. But it doesn't stop at that issue. It creeps into, and we're seeing it creep into, lots of other areas of care. And I wonder what you make of the effect it's having on this maternal care. I mean, you alluded just now to the discouragement that it might be offering people who might think about practicing as OBGYNs, but the invitation to regulation of other aspects of maternal care seems to me to be a potential red flag. And another thing that makes it more difficult to make sure that access to that maternal care is universal.
Yes, it certainly, as you mentioned, does risk going into other areas of maternal care. And also the fact that you have obstetricians and gynecologists perhaps leaving their other states to be practicing elsewhere, you will have, as a result, also restriction for those areas, higher rates of maternal and infant mortality. Because we are, Michigan does not have the issue of the abortion ban, then you will also have increased number of patients potentially coming to our state. And then when it blends into other things like contraception and family planning, as well as just reproductive care infrastructure, I would say that's something. And when I say reproductive care, I'm talking about just maternal child care as well. That's the important infrastructure to keep in mind for that maternal infant well-being over time.
Yeah. I also want to talk a little bit about the city of Detroit in particular and the work that you have been doing here for a long period of time, and how critical the rates of neonatal fatalities, of maternal fatalities are here in the city of Detroit. And of course, the racial implications of that, because this is a city with, you know, 85-86% of its population is African American. The really desperate rates of deaths that are related to this, you know, this difficulty of accessing care really becomes a racial issue when you kind of imprint it on the city of Detroit.
Yes, so the maternal and infant mortality rates, both in the U.S. and everywhere in this and in our state, of course, are continuing to increase disproportionately, and they're affecting racial minorities and Black women at a much higher rate than white women. And it is definitely an inequity that has been persistent. It is, as you said, it affects us in Detroit more, but also around the state as well. The sad thing is that about most maternal deaths, maybe over 60-80% of them are preventable. And so we can do the work and we can improve outcomes. I think we need to just do them collectively. There's a lot of great people doing work in this area in Detroit and around the state as well. And so I think there has been a focus or an increased focus on this area over the past several years, and we are hoping that collectively, as we come together, this will improve outcomes.
And when you say doing it from a statewide perspective and collectively, I mean, I think one of the key parts of that is connecting more of the rural issue to the urban. And that's something that we have a hard time with, I think, you know, both in terms of how we think of these issues. People think of cities as being far-flung from rural areas and vice versa, and that there aren't commonalities. But can you talk just a little about the specific ways that we can join the efforts to deal with issues like this, you know, in places like the UP and in places like Detroit?
Yeah, so I'll speak to at least what the network I mentioned of the 14 institutions in the state that we've started. It's called the SOS Maternity Network. And we are, in our efforts, joining together, as I mentioned, the major health systems, universities in the state. They do have a reach above, you know, in the upper part of Michigan, in the rural areas, as well as upper Michigan. And so through those health systems, we will reach those places. In addition, though, there are the perinatal quality collaboratives that are funded by the state across the state in each region. And those have expressed interest, and also we are pushing for work with them. And they are important because they are the community-based faction or portion of those regions. And so there will be a number of places that will be reached that would not be reached if we were just doing it to the traditional method.
Yeah.
And then lastly, I think we also will be implementing hopefully some part of telemedicine to bring those patients in to make it accessible as well. So I think you have to not forget that angle as well.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Sonia Hassan of Wayne State University, founder and director of the Office of Women's Health at Wayne. Great to have you here for this conversation. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, that's going to do it for this episode of Created Equal. You can listen to recent episodes at WDET.org and make sure to subscribe to our podcast where you can leave us a rating or a review. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lines. The audio editing is by Connor Anderson. The music is by Sam Bobian. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit Public Radio, your connection to news, music, and conversation.